Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Get the long-lasting power you need with Energizer. Menards has the largest in-stock selection of Energizer batteries. They provide solid power for flashlights, remotes, and so much more. Right now, save big on Energizer batteries. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at
Menards. Hey there, Soren here with Behind the Bar for Pint of Cthulhu. On my own for once, Matt is currently occupied. But not completely alone, as we do have our guest.
Hello!
Mind introducing yourself, Jeff?
Yeah, I am Jeffrey N. Baker of Win Suddenly Games, out here in, you can probably guess, the U.S. I think that's about it.
Just had a delightful...
Go ahead, sorry.
We just had a delightful time playing The Crypt Has Opened, which you will, episode of which you'll be able to find wherever you are watching this interview. So, to start off with the question we always start off with, if a pint of Cthulhu was a drink, what do you think it would be?
Oh, if a pint of Cthulhu was a drink. It's gotta have... I want to say something clear, and then some kind of cream-based thing so you can have something suspended in the middle of it that can be tendrily, right? So if you can dye something...
Oh, that'd be so interesting.
Yeah, so if you could dye something green... Because you don't want the two to... You want two liquors that are not going to mix, that can be... So like a liqueur... I don't know what these would be. I'm just throwing them out there. But yeah, you'd want something green, right? That maybe you could dye so they could kind of be tenderly and kind of swirl in the middle and be suspended into your other shot. So it would be a shot for me. Some kind of, yeah, hard liquor.
Fair enough. Fun answer. And just as another general question, what TTRPGs have you played? Have you got any favorites?
Oh my gosh. Most of them. Growing up, I was an AD&D kid with my brothers, but then we moved on to Shadowrun, first edition, second edition all up, and then Vampire, the original Vampire. Then, what did I move on to? 3.5 D&D, you know, fourth edition, fifth edition, Pathfinder 2E. Cypher System is probably going to be one of my favorites. Monte Cook Games Cypher System, for people that want to play a system that is open and generic, that you can do whatever you want. Numenera is kind of their flagship game. It's a lot of fun, really great system. Been very inspirational to me. So that'll be my short answer.
And then can you tell us a bit about The Crypt Has Opened?
Sure. So The Crypt Has Opened, as I had said in the game, the apocalypse came not with a bang, but with an exhalation of a crypt door. Sometime in the 1990s, physical, literal crypt doors erupted out of the ground, and when they opened up, they released this thing called the Mist, and came with it cryptids and malevolent spirits, and nearly wiped out the entire world. But with it also came kind of a Pandora's box in a way that there were also the bolstering of magic. So all the players take on the role of magical practitioners who now use their newfound powers and magic to fight back against the cryptid and spirits and try to reclaim what we call the dead spaces of the world. It's all those spaces that have just been overrun by, you know, nature and cryptids and spirits. So kind of think of Tales from the Crypt meets Stephen King's The Stand.
Very neat. One thing I noticed, because on our podcast we've played quite a few like cryptid games, quite a few apocalyptic games. It was Cthulhu Dreamt, Call of Cthulhu, that sort of stuff. The setting being 1990s level tech is pretty unique. A lot of time they go for like 1920s or futuristic. What made you decide to set it in a modern day, but like a couple decades past?
Yeah, partially is because the 80s is overdone. I think a lot of people use that for Monster of the Week style games and kind of Kids on Bike style games. And I thought the 90s just isn't explored enough. It's that last decade where things felt like they were pretty good and pretty happy. Technology was kind of on the rise, but hadn't really taken over. But then throwing this apocalyptic event and kind of snapshotting the entire world in that moment, regardless of how long you want to say the what we call the Night of the Open Grave happened versus when you want to start playing your game, it's just always in that 90s tech level. With some few caveats, you know, computer technology is pretty much gone or really nascent. You know, you can't really get that infrastructure back up and running like you did. But I like the style, I guess.
Yeah, it's a fun contrast to have Walkmans and werewolves.
Exactly.
Kind of setting.
Yeah.
So how did you come up with the idea for your game as a whole? What inspirations did you maybe have for it?
Yeah, what's interesting is the mechanics came first before the system. And so it was just one of those things as I was working out the mechanics and rolling dice and deciding how I wanted the dice resolution mechanic to work, it just started kind of organically forming in my head. I'm not really, it was one of those things like I didn't set out to do this. It was just like, oh, cryptids are fun. And I originally started this because I wanted to create a system for magical dueling to be really cool and have two wizards dueling each other. And then this kind of modern day way of doing it, and then the cryptid started coming into my head, and these crypt doors and all this kind of stuff, and the dueling aspect fell to the wayside. But I started kind of exploring this really cool idea, and I think it is just my love for EC Comics, which did Tales from the Crypt, those 1940 comics, and the campy horror, even those TV shows back in the day with the Crypt Keeper. And I also love Stephen King's work and The Stand and grindhouse horror, like all these kinds of feelings. I started putting and pulling them all together to kind of form this idea and this feeling of a game.
Makes sense. We don't have, at least I might be a bit young for it, I don't know, but I don't think we really had Tales from the Crypt, but we did have similar things. We had Goosebumps.
Yes. Yeah.
The books, and then we had a series called Grizzly Tales for Gruesome Kids.
Ooh.
That I think filled the same kind of niche. There was a very bad CGI remake. A truly atrocious one. But the original one has that same kind of, like, I almost want to call it a puppet.
Yeah, 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 kind, yeah,
of, mm-hmm, narrator.
And
you know the guy.
Oh, exactly. And in the Tales from the Crypt TV show was a legitimately adult kind of oriented horror thing. The comics were a little more campy because they're 1940s, so they're not as horrific. But like the TV show, not necessarily had cryptids, but I'll say one of the episodes that really always stuck out to me was this logging camp where one of the guys was like the best logger and his boss hated him, and the boss ended up dicking him over somehow and making him go blind. And the other people in the logging camp were like, I'm off on a tangent, I realize, but they were like, oh, we hate what the boss did to you. So they ended up putting the boss inside of a hollowed out log, and they gave the blind guy a chainsaw, like, we're going to help you. Because I think he originally just used axes. We're like, we're going to give you a chainsaw so that you can keep logging even though you're blind. And here's a log for you to cut, to saw through. And that's how the episode ends, him cutting his boss in half. And like, blood spraying over him, and he has no idea what's going on. And it's those kinds of things that stick in my head, are very formative events. And why I kind of approach the game the way I do, where it's like, it's a horrific thing. Like, if you really sit down and think about what happened, it's horrific. But there's a campiness to it. There's a, it's like, it's a bit over the top, don't you think? And so that's what I try to infuse into the game, in the setting.
Yeah, it's very fun. To join you on your tangent a little bit, Grizzly Tales from Gruesome Kids was similar,
mm-hmm,
but it was kind of like, you know how kids shows try and instill morals into behavior in kids a little bit? So in Grizzly Tales, one of the episodes that stayed with me for quite a while was a girl kept her mouth open all the time. Mouth beaver, basically. Mm. That's not a moral failing, but the show made it like it was.
Of course.
And so what happened to her, if I'm remembering correctly, is she kept her mouth open too long. And I think she like breathed in a fly and it laid eggs inside her and they like crawled out and devoured her.
Oh, yeah.
From the inside out.
I love
it. Like, I think it was like a barbershop episode where he had a jar of tongues from like children's. He's cut the tongues out of them if they stuck their tongue out.
Oh, I love it. That's so good. That reminds me of there's another show, if people are listening, to go look up. It was called Erie, Indiana. Erie, Indiana is a real place here in the U.S., in Indiana, the state. But they used the name Erie in kind of double entendre, and it was kind of this goosebumps kind of, you know, these kids are solving mysteries throughout town, and there are always these odd kind of, you know, slightly horror mystery things. It's really great.
Yeah, it's always fun to have a little bit of horror as a kid. Nothing wrong with it. Just a little bit of lifelong trauma. So what were the challenges of making the Crypt is Open?
The biggest challenges is getting people to honestly playtest your game while you're developing it. I think that's one of the hardest things, even in the digital age, in getting schedules and, you know how it is to get a game group running and going. And then it's the challenge of incorporating the feedback and knowing what feedback to listen to, what feedback you can safely put to the side as, you know, not really what you're, the feedback that you need, and then how to incorporate things. So that's really, to me, the biggest challenge of developing a game.
Makes sense. To contrast that, what's the best part, the most fun part of making the game?
Oddly enough, it is the feedback. It's the best part to me is after a game and hearing the players talk about it and listening to what they talk about and what they love and just hearing, you know, the things that maybe you've spent a long time fretting over and worrying about. And then when you hear that validation of those things that you were fretting and worrying about, you're like, okay, great. They do like the thing that I was hoping that they would like. This is working out the way I had intended. When you get that, that's such a great feeling, because, you know, as a designer, especially a solo designer, you're, you know, often by yourself and you're just kind of hoping for the best.
Fair enough. So with I forgot the name, this is why Matt's usually with me to remind me, When Suddenly Games.
Yes.
With When Suddenly Games, there are a couple of other games, at least on the website. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Yeah, absolutely. So the other game I'll talk about first, Weird Dungeon, that was actually our first released game. We kickstarted that over a year ago. Weird Dungeon is an idea of a OSR dungeon crawler. OSR standing for Old School Revival or Old School Renaissance. It's trying to recapture the old days of D&D, the white box, black hat kind of stuff. Any rate, but with Weird Dungeon, the goal was to give players a book that they could use to procedurally generate a dungeon on the fly. So there are 11 tables in that book that you roll on to get the name of the dungeon level, what kind of monsters are in there, what kind of different effects are going on, traps, what kind of treasure may be in there. And you could actually play that game without a GM. Everybody could create a character, sit down, and you all just start rolling on these tables to figure out what kind of dungeon it is. And, you know, you could spend a night just being like, you know, oh, what do we want to do? Hey, let's play Weird Dungeon. Let's see how many levels deep we can get tonight. Because each level gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So you could create a big mega dungeon if you wanted. And it's also cool because you can use it system agnostic, where you just use the tables, but play whatever system you want. So while we do have a system in it, you can use anything else that you would like.
That is so neat.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. The other game is called The Color of Everything. It is I created it for a game jam probably 2 years ago, maybe a year and a half. It's hard to remember. And for that game jam, we had a restriction of you had to use a D6. Like that, everything you did had to use a D6. Okay. And it had to be 4 pages long. Okay. So those are my two rules. And I'm an animator by day. And I thought, you know, it'd be really fun to do a game that centers around arts and artists. And it essentially is you live in a world where each of the players are a singer, a dancer, an animator, a sculptor, whatever. But you actually have powers. But there is a being called Discordant who is trying to remove the color of life in the world. And you are trying to fight against Discordant and his desats, which is short for desaturations. So you have creatures like the Missing Frames, which are people that literally look like they're jittering and juddering because they have frames of their motion taken away. So you need an animator to put those frames back in and cure them. It's really real simple, not much to it. I'm looking at trying to expand it later time, but right now I haven't gotten around to that one. So it's one of those games I plan to come back to in the future.
Neat. Certainly interested in that. I do a little bit of art myself, and I'd love to have a play of it sometime.
That'd be great.
Be very fun. So do you have any tips for people who are aspiring to make their own TTRPGs? Maybe particularly people trying to go it solo?
Yeah. Don't go solo. Meaning find a collective, find a Discord group. I have a lot of friends that are also designers that we bounce ideas off of each other all the time. And we work together and we learn from each other. And so if I can give a shout out to two Discord channels, is that okay? Is that fine with...
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Shout out all you want.
One's called the TTRPG Collective. It's a huge Discord group. They have stuff in there for like, let's see, mutual aid, industry chat, a lot of stuff for you to promote your own things. It's really cool and a really awesome kind of thing to get into. They have, oh my gosh, how many people do they have? Several hundred members are in that one. So I highly recommend that. And then my other, this is the one I'm mostly active in, is called the Titterpig Academy. Titterpig, because if you take TTRPG and you phonetically sound it out, it's Titterpig. And in the Titterpig Academy, its main goal is to teach people games that aren't D&D. And we want to expand people's horizons into all the other games that are out there. But we also have a design channel in there for people to talk about. Because that's what we also believe in, is like you need to play as many games as possible, different games. If you're going to be a designer, you need to be playing everything and learning from everyone. You can't just be playing one game because you're only going to be able to make one game if that's what you do.
I certainly would be interested in that. A big thing we do with Pint of Cthulhu is we try out different games, smaller games especially, constantly. Every season's a different bigger game. Mm-hmm. Call of Cthulhu, D&D, the Fallout TTRPG. But like we did we ourselves, we often do one-shots for smaller TTRPGs, for one-shot TTRPGs. Mm-hmm. So getting a good variety is something we're super invested in.
Great.
Might have to join and see if there's any other folks.
Yeah, join the Titterpig Academy. We'd love to have more people.
Slide that Matt's way. He's going to end up spending a bajillion quid again. And he's probably going to be the one editing this, so I don't care. I'm calling you out. He's a local Kickstarter addict, but we love him for
so it. So am I. I mean, as a designer, I just backed DC20, and that should be coming hopefully in the next year or so. You know, I kicked... Yeah. Avatar. What else did I do? Shadow Dark. Anyway, yeah. I can go on.
He gets me back for it because he keeps sending me nice dice to have a look
there
at.
There you go.
Yeah, symbiotic relationship.
There you go.
Trying to mess with each other. So, think that's about it for now. Okay. Where can people find you?
Yeah. So obviously, winsuddenly.games. Go to the website. The reason why I send people there is you can download The Crypt is Open for free right now. The rulebook, the playtest is version 4.0. You can grab that with character sheets, reference sheets, and start running your game now. Have a lot of fun. Tell me if you do. Please email me. You can email me at jeff@winsuddenly.games. Let me know how the game's going. I'd love to hear. And also on Twitter, you can find me at winsuddengames. I couldn't get the full name. It was too long. So you have to go to winsuddengames on Twitter. But everywhere else, winsuddenlygames. I'm mostly active on TikTok. And of course, we have a Discord as well.
Fair enough.
Win Suddenly Games.
Well, I guess that will be all it right. for tonight.
Well, thank you very much.
We'll see you all later.
Have a good one.
On Pint of Cthulhu.